pretty sure that you said you would only play Overwatch, that other shooters wouldn't fit into your life. But then Battlefield came, you know?
And Titanfall and 2. But
who was talking? Wait, hold on. Who's talking about Battlefield?
I don't think Mason ever.
Last week.
Yeah. This is already, look at Sean.
Is
Sean
it not good anymore.
Welcome to fall 2016.
Sean, are you like Phoenix right now? Like two podcasts ago, you said these exact words. Overwatch is so good that it makes me not want to play other shooters. I don't know if there's time.
I'm not trying to make you feel accused. I'm just
objection.
Because I know that Titanfall is going to show up in today's conversation. I know you guys have both been playing Titanfall 2, just the two of us.
Oh, man. That would be a really appropriate song for the campaign of Titanfall. Just the two of us. Wildly appropriate for the campaign.
With your soldier and your mech?
Yes.
Yeah, so I wanted to hear, you know, just an admission from...
Are we recording?
James.
Yeah.
Is it time?
This is how it happens.
This is how a podcast starts.
This is how
I don't even
the
know
world
where it
ends.
Began. Where yeah. did it begin?
Usually I like to do the whole like in media res thing where
in medias res
where like I cut to I try and abruptly cut to mid conversation, and it's a little fun thing for the listeners to kind of parse out what were we talking about before that.
I want to hear an admission from James about how he's totally hooked on shooters, that he was in this committed relationship with Overwatch for a long time. He went on a date with Battlefield, and now he's like, oh, I'm a free man. I can see as many shooters as I want.
It's an open relationship, like how I have with MMOs, you know?
Yeah, like, exactly.
Hit it and quit it is how I do with the MMOs.
I got nothing for you.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow, you okay. got it. You laid out the information, and you won the court case, Sean. I think if I'm
correct. This is great because I've been playing Danganronpa. Danganronpa, and what I would call what Sean did is a verbal bullet. But the lexicon of that game is far too complicated for this podcast.
Japanese.
I played Danganronpa for a hot minute, and then you came over. You told me that the game does something really stupid and Japanese where the only way to get the good ending is to do a specific series of events that you would have no idea.
Okay,
is the way to get the good ending.
I know specifically that tons of Japanese developers, of course, listen to this podcast because this is the
yes.
most. This is without a doubt, and yes, you can look up the numbers on it if you want to quote me on this. The most popular American podcast overseas. That's a fact. Okay, right? I believe.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
So all the Japanese developers listen to this. And I know they care a lot about what I think because I am a huge consumer. I'm another fact, if you want to quote me on it, I'm the largest American consumer of Japanese exported media.
You're the ultimate
media.
Consumer. If we're going by Danganronpa terms, you're the ultimate consumer.
I would like to think of myself as the ultimate Japanese consumer. That if they were to round up the ultimates, that I would be there as like the ultimate weeaboo. I hate this so much because a lot of Japanese RPGs especially do this where there'll be multiple different endings. And when you think of when anyone thinks of multiple endings, for the most part, it'll be like, you know, good ending and bad ending. But bad ending will a lot of times be a serviceable ending that is like, you made choices to make the ending have less of a not be all roses and stuff, and to be kind of bad and things to have like an anti-climax kind of thing.
Wait a minute. What about good plus ending and perfect ending and nightmare?
And what about
ending?
I'm sorry. What about hidden? What about dog ending?
This is what I'm talking about. Is that
what about the secret dog ending?
And well, every game has a secret dog ending, and I think the secret dog endings are fine. I don't have a problem with the secret dog endings. I've never once had a problem with getting a secret dog ending. The problem, what I have a problem with, is that these like a lot of the games that I'm thinking of, like the ones that come to mind immediately, Danganronpa, Persona games, they're are a few more. Bravely Default, of course, comes to mind.
Love Bravely Default.
Where there are parts of the game that you probably wouldn't know the significance of. Like, they don't. There's no on-screen prompt that what's happening now is important or whatever, or it's going to change the ending. And a lot of times there are things that you wouldn't actually know. Like why you would pick things a certain way. So in Persona 3, for example, one of the important parts that changes the ending is actually pretty obvious. Like this one character gives you an option to forget everything you've seen, and the world will end, and it'll happen so quickly that you won't understand, and that it'll be fine, and you can live out the last month of your life as like a carefree high school student. And then there's the other option, which is like, no,
that's all I've ever wanted.
Fight the ultimate evil. And that's okay, because that's a more obvious one. In Persona 4, it was the first time that I remember it being this bad. So in Persona 4, there's a section where the police, the whole setup of Persona 4 is that there are these grisly murders happening once a month at this small town, Inaba. And the police...
What's that mean? What's that word?
It's just a place. And the police catch someone who they think is the murderer, and you as the player, like the characters, kind of think that that person that they caught actually is the murderer. But there you basically are like in this police interrogation, and you have to answer like I think a series of like 8 questions, and every question has 4 answers. And some of the answers are very similar, actually. Like, it'll be stuff like, do you think he did it? And the answers will be, yes, I think he did it, but I'm not sure. And one will be, I'm not very sure, we can't know yet. And stuff like that, where, like, they're worded in such a way that they're kind of, like, almost semantic what the answer is. But to get the true ending, because there's multiple different endings, and all the endings in Persona 4 peel back one layer of what's happening in the story. So it's like, if you get the worst ending, then and you answer like all the questions the incorrect thing, then the police like arrest that guy. They say this is the person who was doing the murders, and then like there keeps being murders and you didn't solve anything. So like horrible ending.
Aww.
Terrible.
I was gonna wait to say that multiple endings are just the same as real life. You don't know what ending you're gonna get.
I mean,
but now I can't wait, because this police investigation where they, well, we kind of think you were involved in this, so answer these questions and we'll decide what happens to you and these other people. Very real, you know?
It's just realism. The thing that bothers me, though, is like it's like a narrative that is setting up that like you want to know certain things about the world. So for Danganronpa, which James is playing, which is the most appropriate thing that I can link this to, there is an ending where you will understand who Monokuma is, why every
Monokuma being the primary antagonist.
Yeah, like there's an ending that reveals like all the significant questions you would have, like why are these characters here, why were they chosen, what is going on, who is Monokuma, and stuff like that. And then and then the other ending is like none of that gets figured out. 4 characters live and they go on with the rest of their life like nothing happened.
Can you tell me what it is that makes that happen?
This is what bothers me. It's like there's one single part of the game where it is drawing on to what the actual ending to how to get the true ending that reveals everything about the narrative. And it's in specifically chapter 5. There is a part where people think this one character is responsible for a murder that happened, and you're like on trial as a witness, and the way to get the true ending is to lie. Like you lie about about stuff about the character, and you turn the blame towards yourself, even though you didn't do it, and then that spurs on like the true ending. And it's weird because I would think, you know,
do you think this is something that you would need to watch the TV show to know? Like, how would you know this?
How would you know that there's like that this question is like a significant thing that the character? I mean, I don't know. Like, I think it's something that you could easily get people playing the game and then feeling like they're doing the correct thing by answering questions truthfully during this one, like, court scene. And because of doing that, like, you'll get an ending that is very unsatisfying. And you won't really be told, like, why did I get the unsatisfying ending? Like, what was the significance of, like, my choices throughout the game? Because none of them are significant. Like, there's just one choice that the ending is hinging on. And it's very disappointing because it's not a fun way to do alternate endings when one ending is you don't know, nothing gets wrapped up, you don't understand who the main antagonist is and why the narrative is even happening to begin with. And then there's one ending that just shows you, it reveals everything and, like, ties up all the plot holes and stuff. So I hate that. It bums me out. Like, I don't like that. I don't like that, like, a lot of Japanese games do alternate endings, but they're not alternate endings and that they're different ways the game could have gone. They just, like, the alternate endings slowly peel back layers of the story, and then there'll be, like, true plus ending that shows you all the, that shows you everything, that shows you, like, every single thing about what you wanted to know about the story and, like, completely ties up all the loose ends, you know? It's like, that's not a good way to do multiple endings, but...
Did both of you guys play this game, or is it an anime that you watched,
Kirby? I watched the anime. I didn't play the game.
Okay.
And the thing that happens is true to the anime, which came after the game, but the thing that, like, lying in the court case for the to save this one character's life, it does happen in the anime. So maybe... if you had watched that first, which I don't know why you would really want to play the game after that. But
is there any reason I should be interested in this game or respect it at all?
I don't watch know the anime about it. I think watch the anime.
It plays like Phoenix Wright. I mean, if you're into Phoenix Wright,
fuck this game. Just whatever. It seems stupid. Like, it honestly seems like something that you would hate yourself for and would be, like, played and consumed ironically.
I feel like if you don't know how the bad ending comes across, like, it's kind of fascinating because this game gives you a really good illusion of choice. And maybe that's something that not everybody can get behind. But I kind of dug it for the time being. And I hear that Danganronpa 2 fixes a lot of problems that the first game had. So once I finish the anime, I'm actually going to loop back and play the second game. I also want to say that Danganronpa finally motivated me to bite the bullet and get my own Hulu account. For a long time, I was borrowing somebody else's Hulu account, and I decided that I wanted the commercial-free Hulu. So I just signed up for that.
I think you can find it on Anime Haven.
Without
That sounds like some cheater website.
It is.
Do you have a closet? Do you have a closet or a special room in your house that is, like, barriered against other people to watch animes like this? Do you have
I don't really care. No, my Asian roommate says that white people aren't supposed to watch anime, but I do it anyway.
Wow.
She says it's not for me.
I don't think that the Philippines is a huge exporter of anime, so I don't know if she's allowed to speak for all Asian cultures.
But that is, I will throw that out. So bizarre.
Yeah, we've gotten into some murky territory, huh? I like the show a lot. I don't think that the Phoenix Wright style game appeals to people, and I totally get it. I've played a couple Phoenix Wrights, but I think this is the kind of thing where, like, there's not enough user input and not enough it's basically a visual novel that you're playing. Like, you're thinking about things to advance the story in a way, in only one way, basically, or
but
two
it's like,
ways.
Yeah,
you
find
it, but...
you find clues and you have to use the clues to. I feel like the show actually comes off as feeling more rushed, because there's some. I think the game came first.
It did come first, yeah.
So, and because of that, the anime feels like it doesn't really give you opportunity to figure out things for yourself, because the things that happen in the show happen very fast.
Yeah, it's kind of like almost a Scooby-Doo kind of thing where a murder happens, the characters are trying to figure it out, and then no one knows who the murderer is, and then going into the trial, like they remember certain things that like were very weird or insignificant that like maybe they didn't even show correctly at the time and didn't spend any time with. And then like the characters realize it all of a sudden and it's like, yeah, I don't know if I would have pieced those two together. I don't know how you pulled that one out of your ass, but that's fantastic detective work, I guess.
Yeah, also the show never treats the main character like he's a prodigy of detective work when clearly he is. But this is a podcast about video games.
Yeah, and I played some video games this week.
No way.
Oh man, I played some video games. I played some Final Fantasy, which I was talking about last week, and I have much more to say on that. But I played a lot of Titanfall 2, actually. And
why?
I was really excited about Titanfall. I don't know why. I've said this before, like, it was a game that, despite never playing Titanfall 1, I felt like was going to be very good. I was actually kind of hyped for it.
What made you feel that way? What got you into that?
Well, when Titanfall 1 came out, that was before Overwatch, and that was before I played like any PC shooters at all. And I was really afraid I was really scared to step into that ring with
to
people.
Step into the arena.
To step into that digital arena with people who are like. Like basically aimbotting. Some of them literally are aimbotting, but I didn't play any PC shooters. It didn't really appeal to me. I thought I was too afraid of that because I was just not used to that control scheme. And I didn't really like shooters that much to begin with. And Overwatch really turned me back onto shooters. And that was when I went through I was playing like CSGO and Dirty Bomb and
Dirty Bomb.
Like played like tons of shooters until Overwatch came out, and now I'm still playing other shooters too. And so now like shooters appeal to me more in general. So going into this is like, oh, a good a big, you know, AAA developer, Respawn, the old developers, like basically ex Infinity Ward, that developed Titanfall is coming back for Titanfall 2, and they've had a chance to solve all the problems of Titanfall 1. So it was like, this seems like a good time, you know, like Titanfall 1 was a game that people liked, but said was kind of anemic in game modes and options and everything. It didn't have a single player campaign or anything like that. So it makes sense that it kind of like fell flat on its face. It fell and couldn't get up. And now going into Titanfall 2, I heard good things. I heard good reviews saying that like this isn't like Titanfall 1. They've added a lot more options and there's a campaign there. So I was excited about it, and I actually believed I would like it. And I went into it with a little bit of hype, and I was really pleasantly surprised actually. I think it's really great actually. So
you Titan fell in love.
I do like it a lot. The game plays amazingly well. Like it's hard. It's always hard to like talk about that. It's such a thing. It's like something that doesn't come across that well when you just say like the game is very visceral or you have a great control over it and it feels satisfying to play. But like everything you're doing in the game always feels like very polished, very good. Everything works very intuitively. It doesn't take like an hour. It only takes like an hour or so to really feel familiar with like wall running and keeping your momentum going. And that extends really well into multiplayer. Like there's lots of fun movement stuff, like just off the bat, like even if a lot of the other stuff were weaker. I love the way movement feels in multiplayer, like wall running, grappling way across the map, and then keeping this momentum going. It feels great.
I know that one of your initial reactions to the game was you told me you didn't think that it had a lot of personality. Is that something that you still feel after you've finished the campaign and seen some of the multiplayer?
I still kind of feel like that a little bit. I think that one of the things that like turns me off from it a little bit is that you kind of said you like some of the monster designs in the campaign, and some of the areas look nice. Like it's a pretty looking game, but it doesn't really like set itself apart that much. And there's nothing about it that like I instantly see and think like I want to be in that world, you know, like it looks like,
sure,
it totally looks like, you know, in X Infinity Ward, like built a sci-fi shooter. Like there's nothing, like mechs aren't so unique. Like there's nothing aesthetically going on that is like, you would look at it right away and say, oh yeah, that's 100% Titanfall right there. I think it's the kind of thing that like you could see screens of Titanfall and, like especially if a character was just running on the ground, like nothing that would give it away that it's Titanfall with any like wall running and stuff like that. Like you could look at Titanfall and screenshots of Titanfall and be mistaken for like Black Ops 3 or whatever, like other fast paced wall running, like air dashing multiplayer games like that. Like it looks like a shooter. Like it looks like
How may I ask, if you don't mind, how much time have you spent with Titanfall 2?
So for me, it's about 5 hours in multiplayer and 5 hours in the campaign.
I would say that sounds about right. Yeah, like 5 hours in multiplayer and then 5 or 6 hours on in the multiplayer. So, yeah.
Okay, and you're still feeling this lackluster personality, because, you know, it really doesn't take long, I think, to get the general idea,
I mean,
of someone or something that you're spending time with. So I can't see that really improving.
If I'm gonna, I mean, of course it's not gonna improve. It's just, that's just a fact of it, is like Destiny is like a really good example. Like Destiny, the world, the like just screenshots, like it has this very cohesive aesthetic, and it a lot of area, like every area of Destiny looks like Destiny. And then like the magic slash guns and like sci-fi and arcane at the same time, it makes for like a world that, even if until like for a long time they weren't capitalizing on, like it was still a world that I liked and like was intrigued by. And in Titanfall, the world is just humans are fighting humans and there's mechs. Like there's not a lot outside of that always.
I mean, I feel like there is like a pretty good deal of like sci-fi gadgetry, in terms of like you throw flaming shurikens and you phase jump around, like you jump between realities, like in Bamf at people, like Nightcrawler style. I feel like there's a good deal of that, and that sort of does paint it in a way that it's like, you know,
I mean, when that was happening, I want to talk a lot more about that particular story mission in general, if we like when we're talking about the campaign, but like,
I think we leave that out. But
that's like Conduit, like that like it Conduit is another thing. I believe it was Conduit, which was like a time warping shooter that was pretty good. But when you look at it, it's again like it reminds me a lot of like if you go look at screens of Conduit right now, and then you look at Titanfall. They look like shooters. There's not like a lot of like in your face, like this is the aesthetic of this world. And I don't think the Titanfall aesthetic is bad. Nor do I think that like it's too jarring. But I still don't think that it has such a unique aesthetic going for it. You know, even from like the pilots, like the pilots are like cool masked helmet people, like they look like many other shooter that had sci-fi shooters where people are wearing like light up LED helmet kind of thing. So the aesthetic never really like blew me away. I do like certain aspects of the world in Titanfall that I think that they did a pretty good service with trying to like expand on. It does like a Pacific Rim thing, and I really like Pacific Rim a lot.
Yeah, me too.
Where the mechs have like a good enough AI that like there's banter between the pilots and the mech, and they have to like neuralink, you know, like kind of similar to whatever drifting, I believe, was the terminology.
Yes.
in Pacific Rim, where it's a kind of a similar thing, but it's a little bit different because it's not two people in Pacific Rim. It's like in Titanfall, it's like a pilot is getting neurologically linked with a robot, and they're like friends, and like it's like, you know, like best buds, best war buds, you know. And that comes across pretty well. I liked the banter between Cooper, the main character in the campaign, and BT, the mech, and I like how it flows for the most part.
And also the game never ends up taking itself too seriously. In fact, a lot of the times it plays like an 80s movie where this villain will like roll on up to you in his mech, and then he'll like get out of the mech, he'll like open the cockpit, and then he'll like taunt you, and then it'll like say their name, and then they'll like get back in the mech.
Yeah I like
also
it
very much like Borderlands in that way, where it's
that's what I was thinking too, like it definitely doesn't take itself too seriously, so I think that is very good. Like it tonally, I think it hits the right marks, and I actually did like laugh at dialogue, which is rare. Like I laughed at some of BT's dialogue. I always loved the like there's on-screen prompts sometimes to speak to BT, and like the robot obviously takes everything very literally, and there's some like good jokes with that. But the campaign in general, like, it's actually like really good. It was surprisingly good, and it ended up giving me this feeling of more like old school video games. Like, I don't notice this as much in a lot of modern day campaigns, but it'll basically like introduce a mechanic for a mission, and then it'll throw the mechanic away, and it actually makes the story, like the campaign, flow really well. You're always doing interesting stuff. And at the beginning of a lot of the missions, you start to see, like, this is the mechanic of this mission. And by the end of the mission, like, they've taken it as far as they go, and then they scrap it for the next thing. And it ends up making a lot of the missions feel, like, very memorable. It's the kind of thing where I could imagine in a year it would be easy for someone to say, oh, do you remember the time-warping part of of Titanfall? And I would be like, oh, yeah, I love that level. And do you remember the part of Titanfall when all the ships are flying together and they're chasing this enemy ship, and you're jumping like from ships onto it, and everything is like actively moving, and it's like a huge scale combat, and it's like, yeah, that was an awesome mission. Like I think a lot of the missions end up, the campaign missions end up being like really memorable and cool. The coolest one, definitely Effect End Cause, which was a mission where early on you get this like bracelet that changes which time period you're in, so you can go back in the past, and you're fighting your way through this destroyed office building, but when you go back in the past, like, there's military people there and the office workers are still there, and the cool thing is that the game like remembers where everything was. So a door will open up, enemies will flood into a room, you can go into the present, and then there's actually like tigery, these like weird tiger lizard enemies and pterodactyls and stuff, so you're fighting those, and then you can position yourself in the present to be behind where the enemies were in the past, and then like change back to the past, and then the enemies like react to it, and it's really cool. Like it feels like very satisfying and like powerful to be going in between the time periods, and like for the enemies to be like really creeped out by how you're warping around and changing where you are. And then it does a lot of like stuff with the parkour, where you're running, and then you're running on a wall and then jumping midair to change it so that a wall that's broken in the future appears there because it was like actually there in the past, and you run on it and then you jump and change times again. Like it's a really good campaign mission, like definitely the best of the game, and just like so much fun to play.
Right on. But I also have been really digging the multiplayer. I don't know, how much multiplayer have you gotten into so far?
I've mostly just been playing Bounty Hunter, and I've been playing a good amount of the multiplayer. I really like it a lot. It has a really good flow to it. I can't imagine wanting to play without the Titans, because I think they're really well balanced and they're really fun. Like, multiplayer starts out on these big maps, and everyone's on their pilots. If you're playing Bounty Hunter specifically, a lot of the other modes start with pilots too, but there's some modes where you start out with your Titan, and you have really crazy movement. Like I've said before, like you're parkouring, you're running up walls, like running across walls, grappling, moving very fast, like sprinting and sliding
and
shotgunning.
Wall running is actually faster than running on the ground, so knowing routes to get around the map and to be like parkouring around is pretty useful.
Yeah. So you start out with this, like, you start out fighting like rooftop to rooftop and house to house, like sprinting around the houses and shooting, like playing a very arcade shooter where the time to kill is so low on this game. It's insane. Like most of the time, if you're aiming well, like it's whoever sees the other person first, a lot of times can get the kill. It starts out very intense and fast. And then when Titans start coming out to play, which is like a ultimate meter that you're charging, like killing people and getting Titan charge, then a Titan drops down and you can board it, and then your movement slows down, but the whole game like scales up, and it's so interesting. Like you're much slower, but you're way more powerful, and it takes much more to kill you, obviously. So the pilots are these little ants that are running around the screen once you become a Titan, and you're having these like slower, intense like Titan battles across the map while like pilots are running around, and like you can kill them by walking over them or shooting them once. Like it's really cool the way that the scale works in the multiplayer maps, and how when you're like, it changes the way you're playing all the time. Like the way pilot to pilot combat is, the way Titan to pilot combat is, the way Titan to Titan combat is, like it's all very different, and I like it. It makes multiplayer feel like you're doing a lot of different things, and it has a lot of variety because of that.
What I was saying is that one of the things that's very interesting about the multiplayer is the AI component, which is that in bounty hunting mode, it is objective focused, so you're not just running around trying to kill people. The actual purpose of the mode is that throughout the game, waves of AI will drop into the map that you and the enemy team are both tasked to kill. So you're fighting with the enemy team over the scraps. You're trying to kill as many AI as you can, because killing the AI gives you money. And then you pretty much need to try to get the money into the bank without getting killed. So it's this interesting thing of like high risk, high reward, killing a lot of grunts. And then just like, do you hang back to try to cash it? Or do you move forward and try to, you know, keep up the streak? Because when someone kills you, they take half of your money.
Yeah.
And it's pretty neat. One of the things that people have been worried about, though, is the player numbers for the game. So right now it's around 10,000 players online for PC. And people worry that those numbers are maybe a little bit too low, which is, I mean, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy kind of problem, where if people worry that nobody's going to play the game, then less people are going to play the game. You know what I mean? Less people are going to be willing to pick it up because they assume that the population isn't there. And this is something that bothered a lot of people when Rainbow Six Siege came out also. But then the game had such good word of mouth, and people were, you know, talking so positively about that game that the community never died. And the community for Rainbow Six Siege is still pretty strong. And I'd like to think that we're going to see the same sort of thing with Titanfall.
Yeah, I think it's an excellent game. Like it, I understand people who would be like wary to get in. We were talking about like Battlefield 1 has the EA Access thing, and that's not like you can pay the $5 to get in for like 10 hours of Battlefield before you decide to buy it or not. And I think that Titanfall 2 is such a good game that they should have done that, because like or free to play weekends or something, like get people to just get it behind people, and I think people would want to buy it. It's very unique, and it feels great to play, and it's like super satisfying. The guns are all like very visceral, and there's great variety. They have like a good sound to them. They're good and unique in different situations. Like the shotguns in particular feel like super good in this game. They're so
Shotguns, they have a super long range, and the shotguns are by default what I'm using in this multiplayer, which is crazy when you consider that the maps in this game are built for these giant titans. So the maps are pretty big and they've got long sight lines, but still totally viable to just use a shotgun in these maps.
Yeah, and I want to talk, like, you changed the subject, but Bounty Hunter is, like, the first mode, so I kind of figured it was the mode that they're leading with, and having not really played that much of the other modes, I like Bounty Hunter so much that I don't know why I would. Like, there's so much like thought that goes into how it works. Like, other than just killing the enemies to get the money and killing other players to take half their money, the mechanics behind like killing Titans for money, the mechanics behind having to cash in are so unique, because the banks open up after the waves have concluded of the AI.
Yeah.
And the banks are for everybody. So both teams can see where the banks have opened up on the map. There's like multiple banks, and you can like camp the banks to like cash in and then stay in the room and then kill enemies to deny them from cashing in, and then also get the money to cash in again. So like, there's so much that goes with it, with like bank camping, or knowing that like enemies are there, so using your Titan to like bomb the areas that banks are in.
Yeah, or even just like, there's a lot of there's like a one of the kits always has a sonar tracking, so you could just throw a sonar dart into the room and instantly know if somebody is camping it. There's also these remote controlled like ticks that you could throw in the room, and then they'll seek out enemies and kill the enemies for you. So for every single thing in this game, there's a way to counter it. I think that a lot of it is based on the criticisms from Titanfall 1, which is just that the multiplayer felt kind of shallow. This time around, there are so many things leveling up all at once. When you're playing the game, you're leveling up your pilot, you're leveling up your reputation with your faction, you're leveling up all the guns you have equipped, and your Titan, and you're also working towards like several different camos at the same time. And then aside of all of that, you also have a global currency in the multiplayer that you can use to fast track to any item that you really want to unlock. So if there's an item that unlocks at like player level 50, you can use this in-game currency to unlock it early.
You're leveling up all these things, and there's tons of options for kitting out the character. Like, you start off with picking one of the pilots, and there are what, like 9 pilots or something? I might be wrong on that. That all have like their unique abilities, stuff like cloaking, stuff like creating a hologram that does your actions after,
like,
you do them.
Teleporting is one of them.
One of them is teleporting. One of them is, the one I've been using the most is grapple. I just love the way it feels. You've been playing the stim boost character that like increases its regeneration and movement speed when you use the stim boost. So there's a good variety of the pilots. And then you're kitting out the pilot for like their main and secondary weapon, and then the main and secondary weapon, like, you're unlocking perks for those weapons as well. Stuff like I have like a charge rifle. I locked a perk that is like does less damage but doesn't need to charge. Simple stuff like you can shoot while moving when you're using this weapon, or quicker reload, more ammo, stuff like that. You're doing the same thing, like your Titan has options for how you like skill it out. There is a boost thing that you can choose a lot. There's a ton of them. They're basically like burn card kind of things, but you don't burn them.
They're kill streaks, pretty much. Yeah, where you need to grind enough point, like it's like it builds off of your Titan meter, where you need to get kill streaks and then you unlock like a special benefit, like a smart pistol.
Yeah, interesting stuff, like making the ticks you were talking about. One is like amped weapon. The first one you get is like amped weapons, very simply just does more damage. Two kind of more interesting things, like there's a Widowmaker ultimate where called Map Hack, where you use it and reveal the location of all the enemy units on the screen, and they can see them through walls. Stuff like that. Like, there's so much going into like customizing the way you want to play, and I like that. I appreciate that. There's a lot to work for when you're playing. One thing that I don't know why it bums me out. It doesn't really make a lot of sense when I actually lay it down, but like, I don't like that the aesthetic of your character is tied to like what the option, like what pilot you're using and what ability they have. So all the grapple pilots have the same armor and the same helmet, and body type, and you can't change anything about that. You can change the camo on them, but you can't change, like, the way you want your character to look. And I would think initially that what they're doing that for is, like, you can... Maybe there's certain things, like, you see the character and you realize that they have this ability. But because the time to kill is so low on the pilots, like, I don't think it's very significant. And in most cases, like, it's not going to change the way you're fighting a pilot if you do recognize... that it's like a grapple pilot. Like, what is that going to change the way that doesn't change the way you're going to think about killing that pilot? Like, you're just going to kill them. Yeah. The time to kill is so low that, like, you're going to aim at them and kill them the second you see another pilot. And it never goes through my mind, like, oh, that's a grapple pilot. They could grapple away, maybe. Like, that doesn't matter. Like, you kill them so fast anyway. With the mechs, it does make a lot of sense because they have very unique abilities, and if you're in the mech-to-mech combat, it's important to know, like, what are the defensive options of the mech. Like, some of them can do stuff like absorb all incoming projectiles and then shoot them back. So if you know that that's a thing that the mech does, then you probably should recognize that and be waiting for that to happen so that you don't, like, pump out tons of damage and then allow the mech to grab the bullets and then throw them back at you. But for the most part, like, the pilot-wise, I kind of wish that there was a little bit more customization towards that. It'd be kind of cool. Like, the pilots look pretty cool, and I would like to, like, make my pilot the way I would want to. I always love that.
How
customization.
How do you want your pilot to be?
I guess just it kind of like what the hologram pilots look like. They look pretty cool. Like, I would one of the most unique things, but it's still, you know, like I said, like, not that unique is the pilot helmets. It'd be kind of cool to have a bunch of pilot helmet designs and be able to switch between them. And I don't really like the way the robots look as much. So the stim character,
robots are slimmer. I wonder if it's a balance thing. If the smaller ones, which are the stim pilot and the phase shift pilot, if those ones are actually moving faster than the heavier ones, which are the shield pilot and the cloak pilot.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But it's really, really fun to play. I've been enjoying it a lot, and there's no, like, ranked mode that I know of. So I'm enjoying that lack of ranked anxiety that I can just play, like, jump on, play and lose and not be frustrated that I'm losing.
Keep going up.
The numbers are going up, that it's fun to play. Like, even times where, like, we're obviously behind, like, it just feels so great to play. Like, the guns feel awesome. The combat in general feels amazing, and there's so much variety to it. I really do love that you're on you're a pilot and you turn a corner and there's a huge mech and you're afraid and you can't, and, like, you have to change the way that you're going to fight that. But then once you get your mech, then you're, like, fighting mech to mech, and it slows down and it's like the whole map, like, almost it changes. Like, it's hard to explain, but it's like, it's almost like the maps are very intelligently built to work on those two planes. Like, they work fine when you're a pilot, 'cause there's lots of open areas, but then there'll be a lot of, closed, corridors and buildings and stuff. The maps are large when you're a mech, and there's a lot of open areas, and you're fighting in these big fields in these, streets, and then the pilots are all fighting indoors. So, like, there's so much variety to what you're doing in the map, and, it just feels great. Like, everything about it feels good. Like, the weapons all hit their mark. The pilots feel great. The mechs feel great. It plays great in general.
You know, one of the things that we talk about when we talk about multiplayer games like this is sometimes when we discuss MOBAs, we discuss that feeling of being empowered, of, like, I've grinded up, and because I've grinded up, I'm so powerful. But that comes at a loss, is that sometimes when you're behind in MOBAs, it's the absolute worst feeling in the world of you're hitting and you're doing nothing. And this is one of the reasons why in the past we sort of have praised Overwatch, because in Overwatch, you always feel like you're at the exact same level. Like, there's always a chance to come back. The enemy is never stronger than you. They never have more capabilities. Somehow in Titanfall 2, they always make it feel like you're extremely powerful. Yeah. That somehow you're more powerful and you have more abilities than everybody else.
You just have to use them better, right? Like,
yeah, at any moment in time in this game, there's always so many ways that you can be reacting to what's going on around you. And they work on recharges, right? So they work the way that you want them to, where every time that you respawn, you're not respawning with a grenade. The grenade has a cooldown, and you throw the grenades, and then there's a cooldown associated with that. But they're pretty short, and it always feels like you have access to what you need in order to just feel like you can deal with all the situations.
Yeah, along with what you're saying, it does that very well, where if you're playing super well, like map starts out, all of your team is dying, they're not doing well, you're doing well, you're cleaning up, like you get the mech first, and if you're playing really well on your mech, like you, pilots are taking pot shots at you against you, and they're on a roof, and you look at them for 1 second and like fire one like massive round and like instantly kill a pilot, and you can feel like every map of Titanfall when you're playing well, like you get to feel like you're this little pilot that's afraid of the mechs, and then when you build up to being in a mech, that like you have your chance to be unstoppable. Like pilots have such a hard time dealing with you, and the better you play, like you're killing other mechs and ganging up with your pilots to like roam around the map and to focus down mechs. So like it has that.
But at the same time, as a pilot, you don't really feel powerless. I still feel like I'm you know, you can deal some substantial damage to the Titans when you're just a pilot.
Yeah, especially there's like mech weaponry, like a charge rifle that I can like it goes like super long range. It's very ineffective against pilots, but very effective against Titans, and that like gives you a chance against the Titans. You can like climb on board Titans and damage them, like pull out their batteries and stuff like that. So you do have you always have options, and the options feel like very, very powerful. It's just a great feeling game. It's hard to. I really do think that they should do a free-to-play weekend or put it on EA Access or something, because I think it's a game that speaks for itself. It's very, there's so much different fun aspects of it that you don't really get in other multiplayers. I like certain stuff I just like so much about, like when you're playing bounty mode with the bounty hunter mode and you're building up money and you're in the mech, like you have to get out to be a pilot to be able to cash out on the banks, but your mech works like an AI, like it'll fire at enemies around, like it's not as good obviously as a player controlled mech, but it still can like guard areas and do damage. So there's a lot of like interesting dynamics where I was playing a map yesterday and I get out of my Titan to cash in, and it's doing work and it's like killing pilots, and I'm playing as a pilot, so I'm running around this town, and I get a kill or two, and I could see my mech like across the town, and I grapple over to it and then like seamlessly jump into my mech. Like that stuff feels great. It's so cool,
and they have really slick animations.
Oh, it looks awesome. Like I love the animation when you slide underneath it and the Titan just scoops you up and then eats you.
I also love how it says like welcome back, and how your Titan is always like talking to you.
Oh yeah.
And like And once you level up the guns and stuff, they start stat tracking and all that good stuff, you know?
Yeah. It's a great game. The campaign is really excellent and really worth playing. The multiplayer is really phenomenal, really good multiplayer. Lots of stuff to work for and unlock, but you always feel powerful. The guns are great. The pilots are great. The Titans are great. It's great. It's really good. I'm enjoying it a lot for the time being. And I guarantee I'm going to play more of it.
Yeah, me too. I'm excited to just play more of the multiplayer. And I think it's also important to say that all future DLC for this game, all maps and everything that comes out, weapons, they're all going to be free.
I wonder if they'll release more pilots and mechs and stuff like that, I would hope.
They are doing microtransactions.
For those?
I guess they're just going to be putting more stuff into the marketplace that you're going to want to buy the advocate gifts that you get for leveling up.
Yeah. Also there's an arena mode that you like get a ticket for, and then you fight one-on-one pilots like in a dome.
The Coliseum.
Yes.
Yeah. If you go to Buffalo Wild Wings, you can get some free sponsored gear. So maybe check that out, Ryan.
Wow. That's certainly, Coliseum tickets, that is a Venn diagram. That is just a circle. For me, like I'm digging Titanfall 2 and I dig some Buffalo Wild Wings, some raunchy half covered sauce wings. So
right
I'll maybe capitalize on that. Sean, I noticed you've been very quiet.
Yeah, I was getting a little bit sleepy during the Titanfall talk. I don't know. I just haven't played it. Not familiar. You guys seemed pretty engaged with it. Although
it's a great game.
I'm sure. I like this mention of BWs,
as they call it.
BWW.
Beautiful wings.
Big wings. Wondrous. Big wondrous wings.
Yeah. Because on a different but maybe related note, I signed up for that email listing for the new Mass Effect. Teaser advertisement. There's like a very bare trailer where they just talk about how cool space is and how important this time in fake space history is. And then they tell you to sign up for EA newsletters to be a part of the mission. And I did it because I like Mass Effect. And I kind of thought, I don't know, normally I wouldn't allow myself to be advertised to. I don't watch or pay attention to ads. I don't respect them. I don't engage with anything that I feel like is an advertisement. But this time I said, you know what? I'll do it for the podcast. I'll see where it takes me.
All right.
I'm excited about Mass Effect. I like it.
Well, you have been playing Final Fantasy 14.
I have.
Oh, yeah. So this week I expect you guys to actually talk about playing Final Fantasy as opposed to loading Final Fantasy onto your computers.
Well, let me
see. Yes, after that whole spectacle, after our big talk, I did end up buying the game. I bought it on eBay, a physical copy, and then I emailed the person and I said, can you just send me a picture of the CD key? Because it would be a lot easier than shipping the game to me. And he said yes, and he did. And he sent me a very blurry picture that I had to make a couple attempts to figure out the code for. But yeah, I made it in. I've been playing. I hit level 15 today, which is very early on. I've just been playing comfortably, an hour here and an hour there. I'm enjoying it. I like the character.
What class are you playing?
I'm an Arcanist, which is basically a warlock or a mage from other games. I have damaging spells, a few damage over times. I have some debuffs, and I have a pet that attacks with me.
I think the general consensus is that playing ranged is a little bit more interesting than playing melee. Is that true?
At least in the beginning, I think Arcanist is a really good class to start out with, because I've been playing a new character. I have a pre-Heavensward level cap 50 paladin, and that I have some abilities obviously on that character, but I started playing rogue, which turns into ninja, and I'm level like 27, so I'm almost at level 30 to where I'm gonna do like the ninja quest and be a ninja. And like, even at level 30, I have like so few abilities on my rotation. I have a combo series where it's like one attack that leads into another attack that leads into another attack.
You give them the 1-2-3.
The 1-2-3, yeah. And then I have a bleed, and that's basically it. Like in large part, like the way the combat works is like in dungeons, like I walk up to an enemy, I bleed them, I do 1-2-3, 1-2-3, 1-2-3, and then by that time the bleed has worn off, and then I bleed again. And like, that is like pretty bad. Final Fantasy is a game that like takes so long to get anywhere. And the combat is especially like slow because of the huge global cooldown. So like, to just be your involvement in a group, just being like literally like wait for tank to pull and then bleed and then do a three series combo like for an entire dungeon, like, doesn't sound very interesting. And it gets better. Like, you do get more abilities, and it, like, by the end game, you do have choices like in your rotation. But that, I don't know, they give you abilities so slowly. It's weird. It's weird that like, the abilities that are going to lead to your like end game raid rotations and stuff that you're going to be like really make the class or job what it is, you don't get till like later on. I buy like any and any other MMO by the time that you're like level 30, like you would have some, you'd have access to like a lot of abilities at that point. Like at that point, you'd probably have access to like basically all of your important abilities, and then you'd just be waiting for like some of the crazier, more situational or like high cooldown,
the long cooldowns,
like those stuff are the what comes later on. But in Final Fantasy, like they trickle your rotation abilities in, which is weird.
I do want to hear more from Sean since he's a new player to the game. What are you thinking so far of the areas, the music, just the way the game like looks and feels?
Well, I would say it looks good for sure. I like the outdoor areas a lot.
Yeah, have you been to the different cities like Gridania and all that?
I am still in my starting city and the Limsa areas Limsa. Around it.
That's the water city.
That's the one that's on the shore. That's like the big castle city on the sea.
The one that's very easy to get lost in.
Oh yes, it is. A lot of the cities are really easy to get lost in, and the maps are very confusing in Final Fantasy.
Yes, they are.
Yes, the maps have been confusing me a lot. I like the outdoor areas more than the indoor areas. I like the grasses, the fields, everything like that. Seeing like the villages in the distance, the sky is nice. It definitely looks good. I love the enemies.
The enemy design is great.
Yeah, but the towns I was talking about with Kirby, they're kind of stark. They're pretty plain, angular. The textures aren't that detailed. You don't see like any like wear and tear or like growth or anything. There aren't a lot of additional objects scattered around.
Yeah, like, I would agree with you. Everything is very clean.
Yeah, there's no there's no ambient clutter that provides a sense of life.
Also, I feel like I mean, I'm spoiled coming from Guild Wars 2, which is a world of set pieces, but I feel like the game doesn't have enough major set pieces populating the world. There's nothing that distinguishes one portion of this side of the forest from the other side of the forest. In Guild Wars, you really do have this sort of theme park where every 10 feet you're looking at something different, and there's, you know, different monsters and all this weird stuff happening around you. But I feel like in this game it's a little bit more sterile.
I think some of the later areas do a little bit better job, but yeah, the whole game is very sterile in general. Like that's one weird thing about Final Fantasy. It extends to like all parts of the game, and in that, like what I was saying before with like the just giving you abilities so slowly, and a lot of the abilities are just, when you read them, they're just damage. Like you don't have access to abilities that are doing crazy things or unique things like a lot of other MMOs. Like some of the most fun abilities are the things that would make people feel different or make classes feel different, is like how they're moving around. Or like mages, you know, in WoW, teleporting, and druids become like shapeshift and turn into a cheetah and run around and stuff like that. But in this game, like your abilities, you read the tooltips and they don't say they do any, like they don't even try to give you any like story about what they're doing. They just say stuff like deals like 150 damage, or deals like damage potency 150, and then the next ability will be deals damage potency 100, but if it combos from the last ability it does 200. So there is a difference like between the abilities, but they're all just their damage, like is a lot of times what they're doing. Like they're either just damaging or healing.
Yeah, the tooltips on the abilities don't create much thematic filler. And some of the abilities that I've gotten early on have been useless. I do 2 damage over times, and then I just do a cast of damage. And if I'm low on health, then I have a heal. And those are the 4 abilities that I use. My pet is on autopilot and is very effective. It doesn't have a lot of options, even if I were to try and control it myself.
Yeah.
But despite that, I'm having a nice time. Everything has been running very smoothly. The music is wonderful. It looks nice. And so far, it's about what I was looking for in terms of comfort and just slow progression. I think my character is attractive. I like the way the gear has been looking for the most part, and I haven't had any frustrations with getting quests or with managing my inventory. That has been a great thing. There's no ridiculous inventory management at all, which is just a nice, it's a breather after my Black Desert online trial, where my inventory had been filled almost within like the first hour.
Yeah, and also in Final Fantasy, like, there's no bag system. Like, everyone has the same, like, starts off with tons of inventory space. Another really cool thing is that, like, since the game allows you to switch between classes on the fly by switching the weapon, not on the fly, not in combat, but it would be really annoying to, like, juggle all those sets of gear, but it ends up working out very easily because you basically have, like, this armory chest where, for if you look at your, like, head slot items, like, you keep all of the head slot items you have. And because of it, it's kind of interesting leveling another character. I'm just like I don't even need to get gear. Like, I already have the gear for, like, my type of armor. So just every couple of levels, I hit, like, this option that puts my best in slot owned gear, and I already have, like, all that gear, and I'm carrying it with me all the time. So, like, that works out pretty easily. You don't have to loot anything in this game. Everything just auto loots whenever you kill it. So it's nice.
I like that too. It does lower the impact of that stuff though. Like, when I get a new piece of gear, it's usually just, oh, we got new boots and they're one better on defense and two better on magic defense, so I'm going to wear them.
Yep.
I mean, there's nothing fresh or engaging with the gear here. And that's definitely summed up by the, oh, best in slot, just boop, numbers.
Here we go. It's a numbers MMO where your gear is just higher numbers. It's not really like choices or changing your play style.
Yeah. I have come across, I think level 10 is when you start. You're allowed to customize some bonus stats with each level. You can pump stats into your health, defense, damages of magic or physical types.
I think that's a really silly addition for the most part, because it's stuff like I'm leveling a ninja and their key stat is agility. So whenever I get those, I just put them into agility to do more damage. Like, why would I for leveling, maybe it would make sense to diversify between vitality or agility, but it's like, or dexterity or whatever it is. But I'm just constantly putting the things into my main stat, you know, like, whereas with you probably just want to put it all into
intelligence. I don't like having those sort of options even.
I agree, because that simple. I feel that there's either one way to do it that's optimal, or I'm getting kind of screwed, where with my class in particular, I know that later on I'm going to choose between a more damage focused or a more healing focused character, and those stats are separate. So I've kind of felt like, I mean, I'm assuming that you can respec and reset those stats and put them in again. But for right now, it's kind of like, well, I do damage right now. I'll want to do healing later, so I'll have to switch this. But it's really,
I come from an old world of, you know, those old school RPGs and online RPGs like Ragnarok Online, where if you put points where you weren't supposed to, at some point you hit a wall with the content where you can't progress forward. And some of those older games didn't even allow you to respec.
This will allow you to respec.
At this point.
And it's so simple and stupid that, like, I really don't believe it's
so
that
then why
interesting.
Why even have it?
Yes, I do. I do think it's like a silly thing. Like, in a lot of cases, for like tanks, it's always going to be put more points into vitality. For for damage or whatever, it's like just intelligence or whatever it is. And then for the melee is just like, dexterity or agility or whatever. Like,
So we do have a few more topics to cover today, but I do also want to say that I've been getting back into The Witcher in a real big way. And you know, so I'm about 30 hours into The Witcher, and I sort of fell off because I hit this point in this story that I just kind of got bored with. I felt like it was dragging along. But this weekend, I sort of pushed through this boring portion of the game And now I feel like I'm over the hump and I'm on the other side of the hill where everything just like all grassy green meadows and all looks good from here. And I'm sort of like into it now. You know what I mean?
Sure.
The thing that, I mean, The Witcher really is like something special. And this is something that I've talked about a little bit with Undertale, where the thing that fascinates me so much about Undertale is that the developers sort of consider everything that you could have done, or the developer singular in that case, considered everything that you could have done and sort of makes a play on it and sort of allows you to do all of these weird things to press the game in certain ways that other games wouldn't let you press, and it actually pushes back. So one example in Undertale is very early on in the game, if you're calling somebody, there's like a character who gives you a cell phone. Toriel gives you a cell phone, and you can keep calling her and calling her and calling her, and she'll give you a different response every time that you call her that'll build on it. And it's the sort of thing where other games will give you a canned response. And I feel like in a lot of ways, The Witcher sort of fulfills the same promise, but on a much larger scale, because it is a much larger game. Of this game has a couple sections, actually pretty much practically any quest in the game, it allows you to sequence break. So you can happen upon every mission in the game incidentally by walking up to it and seeing what happens. Or let's say that you pull a contract off of a bounty board that tells you to go talk to somebody because they have a mission where you need to climb to the top of this mountain. You could ignore that person and just climb to the top of the mountain and the quest goes on. And the way that the protagonist in the game, Geralt, will respond works in the way that you would expect it to, where he'll say something like, I got your contract. I climbed to the top of the mountain and I did the thing that needed to be done up there. Or if you just happen upon it, you'll do it. You won't know why you did it, but then you'll go into town later and people will be like, oh man, there's been some problems up on the mountain, but now things seem kind of better. And then you'll talk to the sheriff and you'll be like, I'm the one who took care of that. And then the sheriff will be like, oh, well then I guess I can pull the notice off of the bounty board because you did it. And that kind of stuff fascinates me, mostly because this game is massive. And just the fact that they went through the trouble to make all of these small considerations about the way that you traverse it is really interesting. I don't know. Have you guys played any of The Witcher at all? Have you guys?
I played the beginning stuff, and it never gripped me. It definitely is the kind of thing that I have to put in more hours to.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, in the past, I could always make some sort of excuse for not playing it, like, oh, you know, the game has a couple of rough edges, so I'll wait for patches. Or, well, the game doesn't look that great. I'm running an older card. It could look better. But now that it's, like, totally patched, there's, like, so many quality of life improvements from when it first came out. There's really good and pretty affordable DLC expansions that I haven't touched yet. And also, it runs ultra 60 FPS, you know, settings maxed out on my computer. And just like looks and it feels better. The actual gameplay feels better running at that steady frame rate. The combat feels a little bit smoother, a little bit nicer. So I've been digging it, and I don't have very much to say on it right now, except that the story is super interesting. I really do enjoy the world and getting to know all of the characters and the way that you sort of build relationships with characters and with like different warring factions. The game takes place in the midst of this war, and you sort of get to see all of the different sides of the war, because they make everyone actually, you know, they make every side of the war kind of feel like people. So it is the sort of thing of like, well, what side of the war are you on? You know, who do you feel bad for? And as a character, like, who are you? One of the things that's so fascinating about The Witcher is that like, he's not this good person and he's not this bad person. But every decision that you make sort of feels like something that Geralt would do. It's good. It's good in that way.
Do you want to talk at all about the League stuff happening? We haven't talked at all about the upcoming changes, the seasonal changes, and then also Worlds Concluded last week.
Oh, yeah. And that was an amazing series. Like, Worlds 2016, Samsung Galaxy versus SKT was one of the best sets, maybe the best set of League of Legends matches I've ever seen.
I hate that it's the last game and that it was the one that decided it, but it was very good games, and then it ends with like Samsung Galaxy falling apart and playing awful the last game. And
I feel like at some point though it is a war of attrition, right? Because these matches went on for so long, and it was at that time, you know, they've already been playing the game for like 5.5 hours going into that game 5.
Yeah.
So at that point, it's almost like which team is gonna break.
Yeah, but it was weird to see them just play so badly at the end, and the last game certainly didn't have the excitement that some of the earlier games had, and it was weird that for a moment there, I'm like rooting for a Korean team to beat the other Korean team, because I'm sick of SKT. Like, they're great players. Faker is great. Everyone loves them. Whatever. Like, to see them win again and with like for a second it was like, you know, it looked like in the third game SKT was up 2 games. They were gonna win the game, and then Samsung Galaxy like turns it away around in this insane long game, and then they win the next game, and now it's 2-2, and it was so exciting, and it's like, is like Samsung Galaxy gonna come from behind with a big reverse sweep and beat the dynasty SKT? And no, like SKT wins again in like a last very disappointing final game. So that was a little upsetting. I was ready to go to bed.
I was so excited by game 4.
Yeah,
when I was talking to James, I was like, I'm watching game 5, I'm gonna check out game 3 when it's all over. Nah, game 5, I got like halfway through and I was like, oh, it's over. And I'm not looking at the
If you watched
games.
Half of game it's, 3 though, you would have said it was over too. I watched half of game 3 and I thought, should I tune out? Is this done with? And then no, it wasn't.
Yeah.
3 more games.
Yeah, it was, I don't know. It's just boring. I was really excited by Worlds at times, even after North America got kicked out, and I don't recognize a lot of the players, but I've seen some amazing plays and some exciting games, and the casters never quit. They make it what it is for me in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And the community is always there. I love it so much, but that fifth game, you know, SKT wins, and to me it's very anticlimactic.
Yeah, okay. Like that's what I come away you with, know, and I think it's kind of messed up, but
yeah, it's just whatever.
I come away with that, and I think it's kind of messed up, but when it's not fair to summarize like a 5-game set like that, but when you look back on Worlds and it's just like, yeah, SKT won again. Like, they did it again. Like, that doesn't, like, even though they had close competition and it came down to the final game, like, it's almost like it's disheartening, and it's like a little bit expected. It's just like, oh, does SKT win again next year? Like, is anyone going to beat them when it comes to international play? Like, SKT always plays their best in Worlds and they win, and then that's the thing. That's the, like, get Faker and SKT over in Worlds, and that's pretty much a done deal. Like, I don't know who's gonna
poach Faker. Which American team is just gonna like really spend that skrill and just be like, hey,
it won't happen. China already tried that. China already tried to take him for more money than he is making in Korea, and he didn't want to move. He wants to stay home, man.
That makes sense. I mean,
even that, I don't know if putting Faker on an American team would be enough to make them win.
No, but it would be enough to make SKT maybe fall apart.
Maybe worse, yeah. It would definitely be enough to like cripple Korea a little bit. Yeah, that's Worlds.
But you want to SKT talk a little bit about the character changes, right? So they're doing a... 2017 comes with a lot of changes to League of Legends, as every year does. Sort of always gets me excited to play League of Legends again. However, this year is maybe my least favorite set of characters, because this year they're looking to retool the assassins. And as someone who primarily plays marksman, I always get scared when they say we're going to make assassins better.
Yeah. I feel a little bit similarly, where I don't play assassins that much, and like so that aspect of it is not that is not all that exciting. I like some of the things they're doing, but I don't think most of the changes went in the direction in like that different of a direction in some cases. Like I don't really know what they're doing with Rengar. There's some crazy stuff, like, you know, like if you look at all of it, it's like Talon has the wall run and wall jump ability on like no cooldown, and he's going to now be able to like just be mid lane and then scale over all the walls of the jungle and run through it super quickly and then get and then like gank bot lane in unpredictable ways, and like that's a cool change, that's different. But then, like, the rest of his kit remains very Talon. Like, Rengar was up there. Like, they usually, when they're doing these big, like, class reworks, they usually hit a couple characters in big ways, and then they hit a bunch of characters in small ways. And Rengar was one of the ones that they put up as, like, one of the biggest changes. And I don't really see it. Like, from the kit changes, it's like, he largely is the same. Like, you know what his abilities do. They still do, like, Q damaging, melee damaging ability, W AoE that heals and prevents, gives weak resistances and stuff. E is Ebola, yeah. And you know, like it's all the same. Like, and then his R is a stealth, and then he finds a target and leaps on him. Like, it's the same kit. Like, it's only been like minorly tweaked, and it doesn't really seem that different. Like the major reworks definitely came for LeBlanc. Talon's E is definitely a big change to his kit. Like, I don't think that any of the characters got so different though. Like, for the most part.
Yeah, I mean, Katarina's maybe a little bit different. One of the things that I like is they changed LeBlanc's targeted ability to be a skill shot, which is a good thing, I think. Katarina has more blades. I guess she's pretty much just like a Naruto character at this point.
Yeah, she was like kind of, they're doing some things with her. She like drops swords when she attacks, and she has that Shunpo that allows her to teleport to a target, but now she can teleport to the target or the dagger that she threw. So you can do stuff like, you know, throw the dagger and then it falls behind the enemy and then you teleport to it and attack from that. And so she's a little bit different too, but none of the characters were so wildly different. One of like the other major changes, like there's just not a lot of like major changes going into it. I think one of the big additions was like plants. And I don't like them at all. Like I don't see how they're gonna change the game
Living jungle.
I feel like,
as they call it.
I feel like it's like largely what it will be will not even be that it's frustrating or bad in a lot of cases. I think that for the most part it's gonna be a non-factor in a lot of ways. Like the plant system. So I think in concept it's kind of cool. Like, there are plants that spawn in certain designated areas, and there are three different plants that can spawn. There's one that when you break it open, it drops like little healing plants, but it slows you down. So it's good for junglers and their rotation while they're jungling.
Oh, they so can you break... mean honey fruit?
Yes. It looks exactly like Ziggs's, his like minefield E, I believe. And then there's another plant that works exactly like Ziggs's satchel charge for some reason. All the like the plants are weirdly remind me of Ziggs. Like, they're just like if League of Legends is all these repurposed minions, like stuff like Jarvan's ultimate is all minions. And it almost makes me feel like what they did for the plants was take Ziggs' abilities and then change like the way that they worked a little bit and then put them to plants. But whatever. One's a explosive plant where when you hit it, it bombs enemy. It throws enemies away from the center, similar to Ziggs' Satchel Charge.
Yeah, so you can also use it to move yourself. So for example, one of them is near the dragon pit, and you can attack that plant and it'll launch you into the dragon pit.
Then the other last plant is a seeker plant or something, I believe the name of it is. And when you kill
Scryer's Bloom.
And when you kill it, it reveals the map, different like Fog of War in a line from where you killed it. The thing that, like, I think that in most cases, I honestly do think that it's going to have almost no effect on the game at all. The times where it will have an effect on the game, I think will be frustrating to players. The videos that show off the plants, I think do a disservice to the plants, because they show the plants working in such a way that it would be almost frustrating that it would happen to you. So, for example, like the plant that spawns near the dragon, let's say, there's one that spawns near the baron too. Like, it gives the blue side better dragon control, and it gives the purple side better baron control, because you would have to get a ward down, and then enemies can kill the ward because they usually have like a pink in these areas. And if you have something like a Scryer's or a plant there, then like you can reveal it for free and be able to like time it.
But when you're prepping for Baron, you could just take care of the plants yourself so that, you know, it doesn't even make a difference.
Yeah, I mean, you could see that the plants are spawning in advance and then clear them up. If they spawn while you're taking it, then obviously there wouldn't be any counterplay on where that if you're just like you're taking dragon really quick and then a jungler goes to go check and they have that plant active and you're trying to do it sneaky and then they just hit the plant and then the plant reveals that you're doing dragon, or that if they see that you're doing dragon and they hit the blast plant and jump and like pop over the wall. Like, I don't know at the time.
But at the same time, I don't know. I imagine that at the very same time, you know, that could work both ways where, you know, you're doing dragon with your team. You have a ward over the wall. You see that a blast plant is spawning. You're playing a marksman, so somebody approaches the blast plant, you hit that plant, and it blows them further away so that they couldn't even steal if they wanted to. I don't know. I feel like it works both ways.
I don't know if I see that happening as much, and I also don't even really see the scenario that I'm painting where they like come into effect that much. I feel like in a lot of cases, like they're going to be cleared out. Like they'll just be cleared out and then not play any meaningful effect on the game at all. And I don't feel like they're adding anything other than map clutter. One thing that like it steadily disturbs me. A couple of seasons ago when they were adding like the Scuttler crab and the smite buffs in the jungle, I kind of had this feeling of like this game is getting weird and it's starting to get more Dota where. Like, originally, like, if you go back to, like, League the way it used to be, like, there was no Rift Herald.
Scuttler crab.
There was no Scuttler crab. Like, the river was just the river. It was empty space that was there for fighting, and it was the midpoint of the map. Dragons used to have no buffs. They were just gold. There was nothing complicated about the way they worked. You kill them and you get gold. There was no Rift Herald. And Baron worked a little bit differently where Baron wasn't giving you a buff that helped you push. It just gave you stats. So you just get strong. And I'm not saying that the changes have made it necessarily have been negative that like, I want to go jump back to a one type of dragon and not the RNG elemental dragons. And that I want to go back to a game that doesn't have the Scuttler crabs and no Rift Herald and stuff like that. It's just that when you are an old player, firstly, there's increased burden of knowledge, because if you're an old player, then when the changes happen and they add plants or Rift Heralds or Scuttlers, like it's not a huge additional burden of knowledge. It's something that you can like learn about, read about a little bit. You already know the other things. You know what the characters and the items do. Like you're good on that. You know what the dragons do now. You know what Baron does. So just reading about what the plants does isn't too much of a big deal. When you're a new player, like I think it's getting to the point where it's kind of bizarre, like having to learn all these things. Like there are four different types of dragons, they stack, this is what they do, this is why how you could use them, there's three different types of plants, they spawn randomly, there's like Rift Herald, like there's so much more on the map, and it's getting like increasingly more cluttered. And I'm not saying that like plants are, again, like I don't feel like these other changes have like killed the game. Like I don't think that the elemental drakes are terrible for the game, but the more that they add these things in, the more like weird buffs and things that people like, different types of directions the game can go in that people need to learn to start off with, and the more like clutter there is, the harder it is for fans to like for people who aren't very familiar with the game to follow. Like going back when it was just dragon gives you gold, like it's very easy for them just to for a caster to say like it was a big dragon get, they got this dragon early on, it's gonna be a lot, it's gonna be able to buy them some items, they got global gold. Like now it's like they're stacking these types of dragons, this is the kind of stuff they're gonna go for, and like a new player looking at like the plants and saying like what are, there's three different plants and like how do, like what do they do, is there more than three different plants, they spawn, they're random where they spawn, like, or they're random what plants you get, and like there's so much more going on visually and the map is just so much more cluttered for it, and it feels like it doesn't feel like organic to the game, it feels like Skarner, almost like the Skarner shrines, where it just seems like a very hastily added thing that, like, wouldn't it be cool if the jungle were more alive, if there was these plants that could spawn? Maybe the plants give buffs or do have active effects. I don't know. Let's just plop them in. Like, they're not, like, the map wasn't designed with these in mind, but we'll throw them in at randomly at different areas. Like, it doesn't feel organic, and it also doesn't feel like like that's anything that's going to add anything meaningful to the game that like, it's going to add like cool moments or anything like that. Like, I just feel like it's going to be, for the large part, like these weird plants, this weird mechanic that these plants spawn in, and then people for the most part just clear them out because they don't want to deal with like what could happen, you know?
I don't know. I feel like we armchair it all the time, and then sometimes our opinions change, and it's hard to say. I mean, I think it's maybe a little disingenuous to say that the game feels complicated for the sake of being complicated. Only because, like, yeah, there is a lot to learn in this game, but there's so much to learn in the game that you don't even consider. I mean, this is still a game with, like, a ridiculous number of champions, and that's probably the hardest thing to learn.
That's what I'm saying, though.
But then even think about all of the other stuff. Think about the fact that, like, oh, there's, like, three different types of minions, and the different types of minions are worth different amounts of gold. Sometimes there's a cannon minion, but only sometimes, and the cannon minion has more health than the other ones, and, you know, you would parse that out. And, you know, there's a lot of complicated layers to the game, and I think that adding that, them continually adding on it, hardly makes an effect on it. Because nobody gets into League of Legends and says, this is simple. Because from the very beginning, as simple as League could ever be, it's complicated. So adding on the additional layers, I feel like it actually doesn't do that much to change the ramp. But at the same time, we'll never know. Because the thing that is so fascinating about League of Legends is that everybody's experience, the way that everybody gets into the game, is totally different. I mean, even depending on like what roles you end up choosing, what characters are free the week that you start playing League could totally change your opinion on League of Legends for the remainder of you playing the game.
I
you know, think there's just so much to consider with it.
Like the things that make League difficult to understand are definitely the champions and items, like understanding how to get gold and then understanding like what the items are doing and like using active items and understanding like why you would build things, I think are always the kind of things that make people roll their eyes when they're getting into this. Like I know even when I'm getting into MOBAs or anything like that for the first time, even though I understand like the significance of items and gold farming in MOBAs, I'm like reading all the tooltips and trying to understand, like, even when there's recommended items, like what you should be buying first, especially given the enemy team comp and your team comp and what your character does, is so complicated. It's just that, like, when you see all these other individual layers, I feel like it's the kind of thing that makes people like would just be frustrating. Like you're dealing with all this, like these different characters you don't understand, the items you don't understand why you're getting them or what they're doing statistically. Then there's this jungle that for the large part when you're getting in, you don't understand very much about or what's going on with that. There's the four elemental dragons, these rift arrows. And then sometimes you're going in the jungle and like there's a plant there and then something happens and like that's even more stuff that you see it and your mind like just gets numb with how many plants are there and what do they do and where do they spawn and like, do I need to know this? Is this significant? Like, this is another thing I just am tasked with learning. And I think the thing that I can say is bad, regardless of whether or not like these end up being good or okay or bad, is that if you look at like the way I always think about it is like, look at the map, like think of it as blank space that is being taken up by, you know, Nexus and then turrets down the and then the jungle camps and stuff. And then steadily the map is cluttered, is more cluttered. Like, now the map isn't just those things. Like, all the blank space in the map is starting to be taken up by little things, like first the Scuttler Crab in the river, and then the Rift Herald in the Baron pit when the Baron's not there, and now, like, there's like adding new jungle camps and adding plants. Like, steadily there's less and less space on the map, and I feel like they're just adding more things every season. And it's like, how far are we from next season? They keep plants, and then they add another thing. Like, they'll add shrines in the jungle that you, like, you can pray to for a certain amount of time, and after it you get a buff. And, like, then after that it's like, we like the Skarner thing, so there's movement control areas where you stand here to gain control of this section, and then you get a movement speed buff. And it just slowly starts to be like, there's no space on the map anymore. There's no,
for,
like,
what? For what? Space for what?
I think it's fine. Like, it's for not doing complicated, for not being Dota. Like, it doesn't need to have, like League didn't have all these things, and the complexity in League was the characters and the items and stuff. And the more that they add these, like, weird, the map buffs and group buffs and plants and more of this kind of stuff, I just feel like it's adding more burden of knowledge. It's harder, it's more clutter, it's harder for new people to look at, because it's another thing that catches their eye, that they think, like, man, how deep does this system go? Like, even if plants are only these three types of plants and they don't add any more types of plants, it's just the kind of thing that I think new players are grappling with enough complexity, or new viewers are grappling with enough complexity, that when they just see more and more of these space taken up, like, it, the more that their mind is like, I'm not even going to get into this. Like, you got characters, you got items, you got plants, you got, like, dragons that give buffs. Like, I don't even know how to parse this out.
I don't know. I feel like the only way to know is actually to ask a new player, because it's so hard for us to really parse out, you know, that sort of thing. But did either of you take a chance to listen to the beginner's stream for Worlds?
I listened to it a little bit, and I thought it was valuable. I wish that more people had been watching it. There were, like, couple thousand, under 5,000 viewers when I looked, and there were hundreds of thousands on the mainstream. I think it kind of got lost in the mix.
Yeah, I don't know if it was well advertised.
But it was good. I felt that it was still for people who had seen League or understood video games. I mean, I guess you can't get away from that. At first, when I first heard that it was for new players, I was like, wow, like, this is what I would even show, like, a parent, and they would understand, and then they would love League. But it really isn't like that.
Yeah, it is.
Just, yeah, I think that they still do a pretty decent job. I don't know.
Yeah. They do a better job. They talk more about the basic stuff instead of joking around, inside knowledge about the teams, talking about more complicated things. They explain some abilities. They talk about when they're just, like, going for damage, or they knock down this turret and now they have gold and that gold gets them items. It was all right. It was cool. I think it's a worthwhile thing for them to do.
Yeah, I think this is another good example of, like, I like the new player stream. I think it's a good idea. I wish that since so many people are watching the mainstream, that the new player stream was a little bit better advertised. It should have been advertised on the mainstream a little bit more, like constantly having tickers that maybe say, like, if you're going to show this to a new player or a friend that hasn't played before, like, go to this thing. Like, I think that it should be in big events that could capture new viewers or new audiences, that those two streams should be, like, equally advertised, because a stream that, like, is trying to break down things that, like, the nuances that maybe they just run over in the mainstream is obviously good. But then again, this is the kind of thing that like, you're there's a lot of stuff with League when you're trying to explain it to a new player that wouldn't be that hard. Like, they're just saying, like, they got Infinity Edge. It's a big item. It does a lot of damage and it's expensive. So this will be a time where they're going to want to start team fighting because now their AD carry hit this breakpoint. Like, I think that's a little bit easier to digest. But then when you start, like if anything significant happens with plants, they have to start explaining, like, those are the plants. This one spawned randomly and it can be these three different plants and this one does this and he used it in such a good way. And again, like, I just think you're adding more weird complexities that turn the game slowly from like baseball to Blurnsball. Like it's weird. I don't really like this kind of stuff all the time because there's like a purity to League compared to Dota, and slowly League is just going to eventually become as weird and gamey as Dota, you know? Like it'll lose the purity of it being like the most simple, basic, but still very deep, like easy to jump in, yeah, hard to master MOBA. And
the thing for me is that like maybe it's a little bit weird, maybe it sounds weird to you, but I really trust Riot. I trust them to do the right thing by the game. And it's pretty often, and the reason why I'm willing to trust them is because when they do something wrong, when they admit it, usually they go back on their decisions sometimes. I mean, one of the recent examples of this would be like solo queue and dynamic queue, and the fact that solo queue is coming back. And also the fact that they reworked Kog'Maw, and then they decided like this didn't work out, so we're actually going to totally scrap our rework and bring him back to where he was beforehand. And you know, League of Legends is currently the only thing that Riot Games has going on, and because of that, I mean, they're changing the game all the time, and I do honestly believe that they want what's best for it. And more than any other developer, I believe that they're going to do something that will move League of Legends in a positive direction.
I don't know. Like I don't disagree with you. They do look at their decisions and sometimes revert them. I don't know if this is the kind of thing like previously a lot of the major decisions in that came after season changes have stuck. And like I said, like not, it's not to say any of them are bad. It's just that I really do get concerned about the map just being more and more cluttered, and then constantly adding in like new systems that are adding additional things to learn and additional things to grapple with. And I also don't really like the kind of trend towards RNG a little bit more. It's not to say that like you could, of course you could think of like arguments where the game was won or lost because of Dragon RNG, or like you lose a game because you try and sneak a Baron really quick, and then there was the plant helps the enemy team jump over or get vision or something.
I mean,
like that.
Yeah, like it's easy. From the very beginning of League of Legends, games have been won and lost by crits.
Yeah, I don't like crit very much either, and crit is largely something that near the that evens out towards the end of the game, where the character, where like AD characters that crit don't have to think about crit because they're always critting. So like it's the early game stuff that can sometimes be turned with crits, and I don't like that. Like I don't necessarily like that. And then also crits are not true, are like not as true RNG. There's like a false RNG where every time you're not critting, you're building up more crit. So they're not quite as random as just like a flat 30% chance to crit. Like it goes up, and it eventually works out that like you're perfectly critting around the amount that you should be critting. I think that like I don't like that system, and adding in like now RNG dragons and RNG plants, like how many more RNG systems are they going to put into the game? And at some point, will there be a kind of like more annoying stuff to see? Like, yeah, they, like we were playing a good game, then they get a dragon steal because, or a Baron steal or something because of this plant that spawned in. And I don't know. Like I don't think there's a much place for RNG, and I don't like the direction that they're slowly moving in.
Maybe they're going to put RNG in until America wins.
Yeah. Just make the game Hearthstone at some point. Just keep putting in game changing RNG that like allows it so that there's like basically a 50% win rate for everybody. Yeah. Why not?
That's the deal with games.
You think so?
This has been next week. Look forward to all the latest, greatest, newest games. We're going to be playing Owl Boy. That just released today. Looking forward to that. I don't know what else comes out. I don't think we've got Dishonored for a while.
That's
maybe for
a
couple more weeks.
And when is BlizzCon? Yeah. Is that the 8th?
That's this weekend.
God, the Sombra RNG, the Sombra ARG has been awful. awful, awful, awful. I wish I could break down how truly awful that our ARG has been, because it has literally been countdowns to unlock countdowns to unlock countdowns. It is like comical the way that like it's just been count since June. The ARG has been going, and the worst part about it is like it's fine if they're counting down for new things. It's countdown just for a countdown's sake. That then counts down to the next countdown. And we know, like, very little. We don't know anything about Sombra's kit. The only thing we know about Sombra has been images that have been leaked. And it looks like the Sombra image that leaked before was actually Sombra, because there was this recent thing on the Blizzard store, a poster of the same-looking Sombra. And it went up and was taken down, but people saved it. So the image of Sombra we have is actually from leaks. So all this ARG since June, all the people who are like following along with it have been doing this insane like math and coding and research and all this stuff. And every single time they decode it, the answers end up being, "Ha, you were smart, figured it out. Like, I'll see you again next time. Link to another countdown." Like, it never, like, it's insane how poorly it's been done. Like, it's just countdowns to countdowns, and there's nothing like, here's, like, you guys figured it out. Here's a schematic of her gun, so you can kind of figure out, like, how she's going to play. Or, you figured it out. Here's a video of her pressing one of her abilities. This is maybe going to give you an idea what her kit's going to work like. Like, nothing. It's insane how badly it's been.
So let's put a pin in that, because we're going to talk about that next week when they actually reveal Sombra at BlizzCon.
Yes.
And then we could talk about the whole sad thing. We could talk about Gadget Zan and the gangs of Gadget Zan.
Yeah.
As people are expecting.
You think it's going to be called the gangs of Gadget Zan?
The gangs of Gadget Zan. Doesn't that have a good ring to it? What do you think?
I like it.
All right. So let's put a pin in that stuff. Until next week. Next week we'll be talking about BlizzCon. We'll be talking about your favorite new game, Owlboy. We'll be discussing all that hot stuff. But for now, this has been What's the Deal with Games. You could find us on Twitter at WTDGPodcast. On the internet at large at WTDGPodcast.com. And on iTunes at What's the Deal with Games, where you can rate, comment, and subscribe to the show.
Thank you, Ron Galway and Crying, for the use of your music. We use Revive off of the new album Beyond the Fleeting Gales. You can find them at the Road for Cover Bandcamp. Their tour has just completed pretty much, so chances are if you're listening to this, you don't have a chance of seeing them this tour, but there will be times in the future, and you can support them by buying their phenomenal first major album. And that's it. Thank you very much, James and Sean.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, Sean and Ryan.